Welcome to Catch the Craze Podcast Audio Mix, the show that delivers what you need, from comics to music to all things independent, the heart of the industry. Catch the Craze, baby.
I'm so crazy, you so crazy, crazy.
Who's the craziest?
I'm so crazy, you so crazy, crazy.
Who's the craziest?
I'm so crazy, you so crazy.
All right, welcome to Catch the Craze Podcast Audio Mix. This is Sam, the Crazy Man Vera.
And this is George, the Dreamer Medina. Yes. I gotta say that contractually, I have to say that shit.
That's right. Really,
whatever. Whatever.
That's right. He has to say it, just like I have to say the Crazy Man. That network executives say that we have to say it.
The network executives.
This is WCDC Radio.
Oh, yeah.
All right? We Catch the Craze Radio. Yeah. That's who we are. And so the network executives say we have to say it, so we have to say it.
Whatever.
So, my man, where you been?
I've been working. I've been trying to, you know, do some deals and do some things for the CO.
Yeah? Who that?
for Crazy Comics, for the main sponsors of our show here.
There you go.
Try to keep us afloat.
So, what were you doing?
You know, what?
What were you doing?
I was doing a freelance work. I'm working for a guy who's designing a catalog.
Oh, yeah.
For wholesalers. They sell stuff for homes, like big old lamps and stuff like that. But you can only buy them wholesale from them.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a 238-page book. It's a really, really big book. So it's a lot of work.
Nice.
But it's good. It's keeping me busy. I mean, a little bit away from you, but...
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
Yeah. Like nobody stays away from me.
You're a psycho. So what's on tap today? What we got today on the show?
Today we got a lot. We got good things, big things happening today.
Big things.
We have Greg Wyke coming on later on today. Civil Injustice Beyond Comics Incorporated.
Nice.
He's been around for a long time. He released one issue of Civil Injustice.
Nice.
Back in the early 90s.
Was it
2000?
Right after
9/11. Yeah, oh, so yeah, 9/11.
Yeah, it was for 9/11.
Yeah,
it was just that one issue.
Yeah, it's that one issue. And he also has another project he's working on called Ravidactyl. If you visit his website, beyondcomicsinc.com. I just have a lot of questions to ask because I know when he released Civil Injustice, it was supposed to be an ongoing series, and he hasn't released a consecutive issue yet. There hasn't been a follow-up yet, but he's been promoting it. He has a trailer. He has...
It's got toys, right?
Live action mini film that he put on. I guess he submitted to independent film festivals, and you know, I guess he was nominated and won some awards. And he's been on NBC and you know, and some other networks, and you know, so he's been all over the place as you know, as far as promotion goes. But as far as the product, you know, he's promoting a product that I haven't seen up.
Right.
And I know I've heard people say, you know, he's at the conventions all the time, but when's the next book going to come out? And I think that's the biggest thing that hurts independence with the fans.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we're going to ask him, what's the thought process behind it? Why, you know, he has a toy line, he has a film, he has merchandising, the website's updated, it's, you know, today's website, flashy and all that stuff. And, you know, he has the backing, the financial backing. I mean, he had, Donald Faison in Ravidactyl, the trailer, the movie. And he also has David Prowse, who was... Darth Vader in Star Wars.
Right.
And he has Coolio. Oh,
yes.
Man.
As I walk through the valley of
the shadow of death.
Yeah.
Look at my life.
Dangerous Minds. Good
Dangerous
movie.
Minds, yes. Free your mind and the rest will follow.
Oh, shit. And bold. You are the best. Oh, man.
So, yeah, so we're going to talk about that, but let's also talk about what's going on in today. I mean, what's today's date?
Today is the when is this show gonna be?
This show's gonna be in a couple of weeks. So
a couple of weeks.
So you know, we're always behind the times because we pre-recorded and we have a lot of people on the show. So, but
for now.
We're in the month is May. How about that? Let's look at that. The month is May.
Movies that are coming out in May.
And well, let's talk about movies. What's coming out? We got is X-Men coming out this year?
Yeah, 26.
That's right.
Comes out the 26th.
And we also have
The Da Vinci Code. Coming out.
I just finished reading the book. Great book.
We have Mission Impossible comes out.
Yes.
This Friday comes out.
MI3.
Right. There's a few things out now. I'm wondering when that... I was telling you about that Over the Edge thing. That Over the Edge movie. That 3D DreamWorks movie.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it? Any trailers for it?
Negative.
Well, it's a comic strip in the newspaper. I'm trying to look for it, but I can't find it.
Just go to quicktime.com.
Right, yeah, so I'm going.
They haven't told you anything. Yeah. Have you not learned from me?
I've been away for a while.
Man. Away from what?
Away from you.
All right, I'm going to give you something.
I took a little break.
Break this. yeah, besides movies, you also have what conventions are going on locally. It's May. We have the Ultimate Allentown Convention in Allentown, Pennsylvania,
yep,
which we will be at. You have the New York Comic Book Spectacular one-day show, May 7th, mm-hmm, which we will be at, which is at the Holiday Inn on 57th Street between 9th and 10th, I believe, at the Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
You can go to primatepromotions.com.
Well, by the time they hear this, I think that would have passed.
Oh, that would have passed. Yes. This is now, but that was then.
Yeah. We play with their minds.
We had that conversation. So although this is now, it is then. But May 13th, you know, this will probably be out that weekend. Man. Yeah, so this will air the
right,
day after.
May 13th.
This show. Wow. That's March. You're looking at March.
Yeah, you have to update that. Yeah, we're in the studio's a little back in the time. So yeah, you've been a busy man in here, Sam. You've been doing a lot of things.
Yeah, I've been busy.
Yeah, that's
good.
I've been
busy. Let's talk about what I've been doing.
What have you been doing?
What have you done for me lately? Now, actually, we're getting ready for two big events here at the House of Craze. We're getting ready for the International Licensing Convention.
Correct.
And if you don't know what that is, it's a trade show, a place where you put your product up for licensing and hoping to get it exposed to the right companies, to the right media that'll be able to broaden your product's horizons. In a sense, basically, it's not cheap. Believe me, it's like putting down payment on a house for this thing. And but we believe that we're ready to go to the next level. So we're going to try it. This is do or die, baby, and that's what this business is about. You know, if you don't take risks, you don't ever know if you're going to succeed. So we're getting ready for that. So that's a big expense, which is one of the reasons why George has been, you know, on a sabbatical, because he's been trying to raise the money at Hunt's Point. But
nice. apologize to the kids.
Get my money, woman. Get my money.
That's horrible.
That's horrible. Horrible. Impossible. But and we're also getting ready for San Diego Comic Con. San Diego Comic Con.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, we've just booked the flights, and now we're scrambling for hotels. Everything within a 20-mile radius is sold, is booked. So you know, the House of Craze will probably be sleeping in an alley. So if there's anybody out there in San Diego listening, if you want to, you know, take us in, we'd be more than willing to chill with you guys and party the whole entire week, because we're going out there for an entire week. We're going out there from the 17th through the 24th.
Yep.
Yeah, we're going there for a long time.
Your party.
In Galaxy Far, Far Away. Party time. Crazy wants to party all the time. Party all the time.
Damn.
So, yeah, so that's that. So now we're just scrambling, because we know a lot of the guys on the team procrastinated about going, and we waited for the last minute. And even though it's 2 months in advance, we're still having problems getting hotels. So we're going to rectify that. We will be there, though.
Yeah, we'll be. I mean, the things are booked. We have to be
booked,
there.
Booked, man. Oh, goodness gracious, Barbados.
Well, yeah, well, the flight's definitely booked.
Yes. And the New York show, Big Apple Comic Con in June, is going to be a big, big event. It's a Superman-themed event. It ties in with the release of the new Superman movie, and they have Steven Seagal lined up to be a guest at the show, and Roddy Piper, and a whole slew of people, and that's going to be a big event. So you got to stop by the Big Apple Comic Con and visit their website at bigapplecon.com. So I know Brian and Mike have been working endlessly to try to make this event a successful one, considering what happened with the last one. The expectations weren't met, and I think that was just because the Lost in Translation in promotion. People thought it was a gothic or a horror fest it was just a combination of both horror celebrities and film, but it was a comic convention. I think comic fans didn't understand that. So, but that's going to be a big one. And as far as out of state, the only thing out of state is San Diego for us. We're all our money is spent on San Diego and New York Comic Con. You know, between that, I'm telling you, it's like a mortgage. And we're going to get into that. One of the things we want to start up is a bi-weekly segment of the business of Crazy Comics and how we started and what we do, and you know, how we put our books together, and from networking, and you know, that side, that angle of the business from our perspective, so there's any independents out there that are looking to hear what we have to say and possibly walk away with something and learn from our mistakes, and so they won't make the same mistakes, you know. This is a show that'll be for you, and we'll get to that, you know, as the days progress. But that's what's going on then, you know. What are you looking at?
Not just that website, that Over the Hedge thing. I want to find a little bit more about it, but whatever. So anyway, yeah, so that's what we've been up to now. People should look for the ad in Wizard.
Yes, Wizard number 177B. We have an advertisement, half-page ad. That ties in with the licensing show in San Diego.
Right.
And basically it's promoting the fact that we're going to be at both shows, both events, which are two really big events.
Right.
And we also have a double-page article, which is going to be in Royalties Magazine. It's a trade show industry magazine only, so it's not really available to the public unless you're a subscriber to their magazine. It goes out to every, I guess, major company worldwide. And they're doing a full article on Crazy Comics. And one of our properties, there's an alien on my toilet. So that's a good thing for us. You know, I was supposed to be a guest on the Writers Roundtable last week. But I guess they lost in translation. They had somebody else booked. So don't know when that's going to happen again. I just have to wait for them to contact us. And besides that, Catch the Craze is getting bigger and better. The listener fan base is exceeding our expectations monthly, and we have new members on the forum. Thank you guys for joining. If you're a member of the forum, please don't hesitate to write in and let us know what you think. That's the biggest reason for the forum, so that we can get feedback from you. If you think that there's something we could be doing better, if you like this show, whatever it is, let us know. We have a poll on the forum right now. Let us know what you think about the show. It's an opportunity for you to vote and also put in your comments. Believe me, you know, we weren't born to do this. You know, it's something we wanted to do to give back to the independent market, and so we can always get better. So if you think there's something that we should be doing better, let us know. You know, what do you want to see more of on the show? Who do you want to see as guests on the show? And we'll get them. You know, those kind of things. You let us know. What questions? You think we're not asking enough questions? You think we're too vague? Do you think that maybe we're cutting off the guests and we're not allowing them to answer? Whatever it is, just let us know. You know, we really, really appreciate that, and we want that feedback. We need it. It's like a drug. We need you. I am the law. Wow. So, but what's going on? What's going on? We have a new show that I started.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, well,
Jordan, comic.
The comic show. It's What Did You Pick Up This Week?
That's what it's called, just the comic show.
Yeah, the comic show. And it's like.
You have a lot of time in your hands.
Actually, no, I have to keep the business going.
Yes, that's true.
Well, you know, as the sponsorship increases, I have to have more outlets for them to promote their products. So sometimes our shows are so booked that we might not be able to plug everybody's ads, and we don't want to filter our shows with just ads, so we had to create another show as another venue, another outlet for our sponsorships, listener base. But it's the comic show, and George thinks that my opening theme song is corny. And
you should put a poll up on the forum and see what people are thinking. See what people think.
Come on, what you reading?
God, that
coming from the comic store.
Listen, that would have been hot in the 90s, but it's 2006, rap has changed a little bit.
The right stuff.
That's your roots. That's from the heart right there. Now, you know, it's cool.
It's cool. What do you think about the theme song?
Yeah, that is not what you think.
I was sitting here 1 in the morning.
Are you with me and Sam's wife, or are you with Sam on this one?
You're with me, right?
You're with me.
Fight the power.
Oh, yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Fight the power.
Some Chuck D.
Yeah, boy.
Some Public Enemy stuff. Wow.
Pause. Take a breath and go for yours. I'm like the man at the dance floor. That's me, baby.
Great.
But anyway, the comic show. It's a weekly show, and basically we talk about the books we like to read. And we're waiting for George to pick up his books. He hasn't picked up any this week.
I haven't had a chance.
He's the Marvel guy.
Into Midtown,
I'm the indie guy. He's the Marvel guy. He's the mainstream guy. So, and I know you guys out there that, you know, the haters that, you know, argue with me about why I just read indie books. It has nothing to do with the big two. It just has to do with my preference. My preference is, you know, I think the heart is indie, you know, and that's where the good stories are at, you know, and that's that, you know, and
that's all you got to say about that.
That's all I'm going to say. Done deal.
So wait, so let's recap. This show is airing May 13th?
This show is airing May 14th, I believe.
14th. That's the Sunday.
The Sunday, the following Sunday from now.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's got to be the 14th, because the 7th is...
The 7th is...
Sunday.
Andrea Grant.
It's less... Yeah. So it's the 14th?
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
So...
And, what else?
Are we going to go into commercials and come back with Greg, or you want to...
Nah, I think we still have enough time for a little something.
Yeah, let's make them wait.
Let's talk about where we are with There's an Alien in My Toilet.
There's an Alien in My Toilet is in production, book two.
Yes.
Well, you're working on book two and book three, right?
Yes.
You're like George Lucas right now. You're working on two and three.
I'm working on... All right, guys, you want to know what it's like here? Yeah, I'm going to tell you what it's like. I'm going to tell you right now.
Here you go. Get the violins.
I get up at 6 a.m. in the morning. Give myself a stretcher, a morning yawning. I get up in the morning, 6 a.m., I get, take the dogs out, clean up their poop. Nobody's cleaning up my poop, but I got to clean up theirs. Clean up their poop, go to work, boom. I get home at 8 o'clock at night, come downstairs to the House of Craze, to the studio. And what do? I'm working on two issues of There's an Alien in My Toilet while writing Forbidden, while Anibala Royal is drawing that. Updating the websites, both Catch the Craze and Crazy Comics and Cosmic Wars, and getting all the publicity and the campaigns ready, and the marketing aspects, booking the shows for the guests for the shows. So, yes, I am a little fatigued, but that's the nature of the business. If you want to do this, you got to do it, or don't do it at all. That's basically how it is. So that's my day. My day is I go to sleep at 2 in the morning, and I get up at 6 in the morning. That's every day. To exhaustion. And so if I'm not drawing Disney in My Toilet, I'm drawing Hi, I'm Duty from Uranus. If I'm not drawing that, then I'm drawing to The Adventures of Duty, which is the children's book version. And if I'm not doing that, I'm writing to Forbidden. And plus the fact that we also have clients working on some logo designs for a client of mine. His name is Tyrone Freeman. He's going to be coming up with his own clothing line. And also just locked in another client. His name is Clarence Petty. We'll be designing his website. And George has some clients that he just brought into the table. You want to speak about that?
Yeah, well, it's just she's actually a freelance artist also. I don't know if I'm allowed to say her name.
You don't have to say it. Jane Doe?
Yeah, Jane Doe. She's a freelance artist. She needs a website. And just working with this guy doing that, the catalog.
Yeah.
So, we're busy. I mean, then I still got to finish coloring all those pages that you...
Yes, you got to stop. You got to stop tripping, because I'm going to have to stop bust a cap up in here.
Whoa.
And crazy. Yes. It's funny. He tells me you have to go to sleep. I said, sleep? There's no such thing as sleep.
Come on now.
We don't sleep in Crazy Comics. No, but the reality of it all is if you have a passion and if this is something you want to do, this is it. You know what I mean? It's needs the business. I have a great wife. She's understanding. She's a career-driven woman, so she understands that she has her own career she's working on. So she gives me the freedom in the room that I need to get this going. At the same time, we meet somewhere in the middle, and we make time for each other, whether it's an hour a day, whether it's a full day off, where we just spend the day together and do nothing but stay away from everything else and just hang out together. But this is what it is, and we have to bust our humps to get this going. Because no one's going to give you a helping hand. And in this business is who you know, really. Because you can have the worst concept, kid, but somebody out there that likes you, if a Joe Quesada likes you, he gives you that helping hand, you're gold. You know what I mean? But if you have the hottest concept and no one knows you and you don't exist and you don't have that right connection, you got to hustle. Yeah. So that's what we're doing here. We're hustling.
No, and I'll be honest with you. I think it goes beyond just this industry. I think
in any
industry, it's who you know more than what you know nowadays. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you think you know.
That's just the reality of the situation.
Right. You have no idea.
I'm looking at some of the pages that Sam has here for the Alien book number 2.
Yes, doo-doo.
Which I'm sure you emailed me.
Yes, I did. I emailed you all of them.
Yeah, there's 10.
Somewhere I can't find it. You know that?
Yeah.
I've been looking all over that. So like, I have to redraw that thing because I can't find it. I actually lost one of my pages. That's crazy.
Not good.
That's not good at all. Thank goodness for Chef Boyardee. So that's our cue for commercial break. So when we come back, we will have Greg F. White of Beyond Comics Incorporated. See you soon, baby. Breeze out. Yeah. The Comic Book Show. What are you reading? What did you pick up this week? That's right, we're bringing it to you live, baby. Sam the Crazy Man Vera and George the Dreamer Medina. every week, all the time, on time, we're going to give you some highlights on comics we like to read. So tune in and catch the craze, baby. Break it down, man. See ya. All right, we're back. This is Catch the Craze Podcast Audio Mix, and I am Sam the Crazy Man Vera, and we have a special guest on today. We have Greg Weick of Beyond Comics, Inc., or beyondcomics.tv, if you visit the website. What's up, Greg?
Hey, how you doing, man? What's going on?
How's it going?
Okay, really good, really good. Catch the craze, everybody.
Let's create a timeline. Let's go back to when you were a little lad.
Sure. And, well, first I was born with a cape.
So let's tell us what was when you were, let's go back to when you first decided that when you first started drawing, actually.
Sure. Actually, you know, it's funny. My mom always tells this story, which is that I was about 2.5 years old, sitting on the floor, and I would stare at my hand and try to draw it. And she tells me this. I don't remember it, but she told me that I would run in and, you know, start doing these things and sitting and drawing affixed. It's like this little infant. All these different things, and she said to my father, "Look, that's not normal. You know, who sits there at 2.5 years old and actually tries to study the human hand? You know,
right?"
You know? And he's like, "You think so?" She's like, "I'm telling you, he's going to be an artist. Look." And sure enough, by, you know, literally by about 3.5, 4 years old, I started drawing, you know, all these superhero characters just nonstop, like full color. And it's interesting too. I saw a book with some of Alex Ross's work when he was a little child, and it looks identical to the way, you know, me and a bunch of other artists would draw and saw characters as children.
Wow.
So I think there must be something in everybody who draws comic books, you know, that they see it a certain way.
Right.
The one thing that we had all in common is we forgot to draw necks on all of our people. So big round heads sitting on the chest.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember like this epiphany I had when my mom walked in the room when I was a baby, and she's like, "Greg, this is a great picture of the Hulk, but you should draw eyebrows on it." And I was like, "Eyebrows? What the hell is an eyebrow, you know? Is it an eye?" She's like, "No, eyebrows are furry things on the eye." So I drew it like on the side of the head. She's like, "No, up here." And I was like, "Oh, how could I have missed that?" You know? She's like, "And maybe a neck too." And I was like, "Of course.
Of course."
You know? So I'm like 4 years old realizing I've left out, you know, eyebrows and necks on my characters. And, you know, suddenly by the time I got to 5, I realized that people don't have 26 fingers and they actually have, you know, 5 on each hand.
Wow.
I just didn't know when to stop drawing fingers, you know.
Exactly.
And then there were different sized legs and trap. And as you see, my artwork looks just the same as back then. But
wow.
But, yeah, that's how it kind of started. And, you know, literally by, I think by about 6.5, I was able to duplicate, like, Popeye drawings and Superman drawings. And by 8, I started duplicating Jose Luis Garcia Lopez's work, you know, which was like Batman versus Hulk in that big oversized famous issue that he drew, you know?
Right.
And I met him at the Comic-Con just a couple months ago, which was a real thrill for me. I think he's an amazing artist. So Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, for those of you who want to go check it out, it's pretty cool. But yeah, just started kind of duplicating that, and then by the time you know, I got to I remember by the time I was about 17 when I went to a school of visual arts, I was like, yeah, cool, I'm gonna, you know, meet people who we could team up with and be friends with together, and we all draw superheroes, and I walk in, and everybody hates you if you draw good, you know?
Right, exactly.
They're, like, competitive, and they're like, "What, you draw good? Let's get them," you know?
Exactly.
I couldn't believe it, you know? They have piercings in places I didn't know existed, you know? And that's cool and everything, you know? But it was just, like, it was just a total shock, you know? There was, everybody was in their own thing, and I remember that the first year in School of Visual Arts, you know, you had to go on this automatic block, and some of my friends who were in the, like, the second year level were taking the comic book classes because they got to choose those classes, and they wouldn't let you the first year.
Right.
So they let me sit in on Walter Simonson's class.
Nice.
Who became my teacher later, who's amazing. And, you know, I remember walking in and just getting depressed at how unbelievably good everybody was.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's it, I'm going to quit. That's it. It's finished. It's over. Everybody just is 1 billion times better than anything I could have expected. Everything looks professional. It's great. They're only a year, you know, past where I am.
Right.
You know, they're only like, you know, a senior. And I'm not a senior. I'm sorry. You know, just 1 year above freshman.
Yeah, sophomore.
And you're right, right. And I couldn't believe it. And, you know, I just made this decision. I said, you know what? This is the time in your life where, and other people I think who are listening to this interview are probably, you know, who are artists probably sense this as well. There's a time that you hit in your life where you're like, I'm either going to quit and stop, or I will just devote every waking second to mastering this so that when I get there,
right,
you know, I'm, you know, at least at that same level, you know?
Exactly.
And that's exactly what I did. I just bought every art book imaginable, you know? Everything from, you know, anatomy books to perspective books to, I mean, like the classic, you know, books, Brigman and, you know, oh my God, I mean, you name it, David K. Rubin's, you know, book, Dynamic Figure Drawing, you know, Bernd Hogarth, you know, just everything you could think of, you
right.
know. And just broke down how the body moves and the muscles inflate and all that stuff. And then also Will Eisner and visual storytelling and storyboards and, you know, and then writing and Dennis O'Neill, you know, and I got him as a teacher later, and John Ostrander and Klaus Janson and, you know, and of course the late, great Joe Orlando and all these amazing artists. And by the time I hit second year, you know, I was just finishing the work and really just drawing my butt off, spending like 12 hours, like every page, nonstop. And it was an exhausting process. You know, you feel like you're aging while you're sitting there and your hand is, you know, you're holding your hand under boiling hot water to stop the pain from cramping up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Your fingers and your arm. And I remember I did a drawing for Todd McFarlane to submit for Spawn. And I showed Joe Orlando in his class at the end of my second year. And I remember, like, he takes the drawing and he holds it up to everybody. And he's like, class, look at this. He says, this is going to be the first work that gets published. And I was like, what are you doing? Stop it. Don't do it. I was excited, but incredibly embarrassed. You
right.
know what I mean? And I realized that by him doing that, every single person there would, like, jump down my throat. What is he thinking to get published? What are you trying to say? You know? And it was crazy, but sure enough, he was right. Joe Orlando was right. It was the first professional piece that got published, and that was the first thing I did with Spawn for Todd McFarlane, and issue number 30 of Spawn.
Right, I have that book.
Oh, you got that?
Yes.
that's right, yeah. So it was, that was a thrill. That was, like, incredible, and then just that kind of spiraled the whole thing off, you know, just that they actually made it, like, the three-year anniversary featured poster, and I drew this picture of Spawn lunging towards Angela and stuff, and I was actually the first person to change the Spawn outfit a little bit by making, like, the skulls on it three-dimensionalized.
Right.
You know, instead of, like, flat, they used to be, like, kind of flat little pieces of cardboard.
Right.
So just little fun things like that, and I just had a ball drawing it, and I remember the first day that I got the book in my hands, because I, you know, I submitted it there, and it got accepted, and then it didn't come out for a year.
Right.
So they always have, like, a year in advance schedule. When I got it, it was the first time that I saw you know, my work digitally colored, and I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. I mean, it was like this surreal experience.
Yeah.
First time to see your work digitally colored with all the shades and colors, I was like flipping out, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, yeah, so for a young guy back in the day, know, it was exciting, you know? So that's kind of the timeline of, you know, childhood, kind of getting my first break into the whole comic world, you know. So I was really thankful. I was really, really thankful that they gave me a shot.
Right, but it doesn't stop with illustration. I mean, because you were working on life-size costumes. And
that's right. That's right.
You know, how'd you get into that?
Well, that's a great question. I guess, you know, I started, I guess back when I was 14, and, you know, I started seeing all these big, you know, movies and things coming out and, you know, looking at Roman armor and stuff. And then, you know, I saw the Batman movie with Michael Keaton that, you know, Tim Burton directed and that bodysuit. And then they did the Flash TV show with the big, you know, muscle suit and things. And I thought when I started learning anatomy and studying and things like that, that might be good if I do, like, a life-size sculpture of the human body.
Right.
So I started sculpting, you know, and I remember, I mean, if you can imagine, it's like a 14-year-old kid saying, hey, mom and dad, listen, I'm going to, you know, sculpt a human figure in the house. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, sure, you go do that. So, you know? And then I remember my parents walked home, and they come inside, and there's like a 6-foot-tall mannequin standing in the living room.
Wow.
With his arms extended in like a T pose, you know, like a half jumping jack position.
Right.
And like, you know, boxes to the ceiling of like Roma number 3 clay, which is like, by the way, like the hardest clay you can possibly order. I had no idea you can order soft clay. So I got like the hardest clay in the world. It doesn't dry either. It's like oil based. And I sat there and I spent like 3.5 months sculpting the human anatomy over this kind of, you know, generic statue in the middle of the house. And like the entire living room, you know, and dining room got transformed into like a giant sculpture house.
You know?
My parents were like, what the hell are you doing? You can't do this. That's, you know, what are you going to do? I'm going to make it into a big latex molded suit. They're like, what is that? You know? Don't worry, you'll see. And it's funny, I have video of this stuff too. But it was really a blast. And then, you know, peeling the latex off the sculpture and the plaster casting and making a big suit. And I remember it was really funny. My friend of mine at the time would come over, and he'd always, like, poke at the statue. This thing took, like, 14 months for me to do. It was, like, the first time I did it instead of, like, you know, the normal 6-month period. He keeps, like, poking the thing, and he's sticking it and everything. So one day I finally finished the suit, and I peel it off, and it's this big red latex molded bodysuit. So I decide to, you know, dress up in it and play a joke on him.
Right.
So I stuff the mouthpiece with, like, some burlap, and I'm sitting there standing up in the same pose as the mannequin was in. And I'm standing there. So he walks in. He's like, hey, where's Greg? And, you know, my folks are like, oh, you know, he'll be back later, you know, no problem. So he's standing. He starts poking me, thinking that I'm the statue, right, because I'm wearing this big, you know, latex suit. So he's poking me. He's this big guy, and, you know, he's all tough and everything, and he's poking it and looking at it, and then I just grab him, you know?
Oh, shit.
Screamed like a little girl. Ah! You know? He was, like, freaking out, man. It was hilarious. I mean, he literally almost fainted. He just passed out, you know? He had no idea. I was like, dude, calm down. It's me, you know? That was something. That was really something.
Wow.
And I remember, too, after that, there was a big, it's actually the U.S., the national costume competition that they held out in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And called PhilCon, this big kind of thing. And I said, you know, maybe I could try to enter in the costume contest there, you know. So I said, okay, let me try to bring this suit with me on the train and get out there. So what ended up happening was, the suit is one-piece latex, you know?
Yeah.
If you remember, I made it like a recreation of the Flash suit, you know?
Right.
So it's all muscles and, you know, latex molded, like, bulging out the pectoral muscles and shoulders and stuff, you know? Kind of like the new Superman suit that Brandon Routh wears. but really, it was like this huge piece, and I had a zipper hidden in the spine, so you'd climb into it, so you couldn't take it apart. It wasn't like the Batman suit where it's in pieces.
Right.
So I took 2 garbage bags, and I taped one over the top and one on the bottom, and I flung them over my shoulder. And I'm walking through Penn Station in New York, you know, thing, and people are looking at me like, what the hell is he carrying now, you know? And I didn't even think of it at the time. You know, I'm like a teenager. I'm walking around the place. And I get on the train, and, you know, you couldn't put it anywhere, so I sat it in the seat opposite me, right? And I put it down, and, you know, one conductor kind of walks by in the train, and he's looking like, walks by, and I didn't even notice this at first. I just kind of say, gee, I wonder why they're looking. It's just, you know, like luggage, right?
Right.
And I didn't realize that the face, hands, chest, knuckles, and knees of the costume were kind of bulging through the black plastic bags covering over it. And it looked like a human being sitting in the chair with black garbage bags over it, right? And I'm sitting in the train, and I'm just, you know, relaxing, and you know, 5 minutes later, 2 conductors come. Another 5 minutes later, suddenly 3 conductors are walking by, and they're looking. Literally, after 20 minutes, and I'm completely serious, 6 conductors in that freaking train burst the door open. They say, you, what's in the bag? I thought they were kidding. So I said, oh, it's a dead body. Oh, my God, I made a mistake. Okay?
Oh, shit.
That was, like, not the right answer. They all out there walkie-talkies as if it's like guns or something. Open the damn bag now! Open the bag now! He's screaming at me, open the bag! Like, no, I'm gonna open the bag! They will not let me say a word. And they're like freaking out. I've never seen anybody so upset. And they made me rip the bag open to show them, like, look, it's a costume scene. I'm like flicking the hand up and down, showing them it's not a dead body. Of course, keep in mind, the first time I opened the bag, it's like red, okay? red human body in a body bag. Oh my God. Terrible. Yeah, when I showed them, it was just a costume, you know, and they see a lightning bolt across the chest for them. And they're like, oh, thank God.
You know? Oh, you're lucky they weren't cops.
Oh, my God. That was terrible. But it was good. I remember, like, in the competition, it was great. You know, I was lucky enough the costume placed, and this little kid walks up to me. I'm, like, wearing a suit and stuff, and he's like, hey, I'm sorry they canceled your show. I'm like, oh, that's okay. You know, I still got the comic book, you know. Huh. Crazy, man. And that's a crazy comic exclusive right there.
There you go. But you eventually went on to make a Batman version.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, started doing some Batman suits and Robin, and it was that was really actually cool because I did a design for Robin when I was a teenager, and which actually was really what I turned my Ravenactyl character from that original design I did, and I sent it into Bob Ringwood, who was the lead costume designer for the Batman films there. And 6 months later, it took a long time, but 6 months later, he sent a letter and he said, oh, you know, we're not going to have Robin appear in Batman Returns, but, you know, really like the designs and keep in touch and things like that. And it's funny, too, because when they made the Batman Forever movie, the suit looks exactly like that, you know?
Right.
But you have no copyright over other, you know, redesigns of characters that you do. And it's kind of like, I thought, kind of a natural progression.
Right.
For the character, but that's when I kind of started building up the Robin suit, and people started saying, hey, like, Robin suit kind of design you did looks like you kind of kick Batman's butt, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, hey, maybe I should kind of really just change the design completely and kind of create my own character. And that's when I did the whole Ravenactyl character, you know, with this, which is the new book coming out soon. So.
Yes. Soon, so. Yes. So now let's get into that stage of the game. You finish college, and now you say, you know what, I want to, where did the idea for Beyond Comics come in?
Oh, that's a great question, actually. I think it was that I was kind of spreading myself really thin. I was doing like 100 different things. I was doing like latex molded suits, and I'm doing comic book artwork, and then I'm trying to do storyboards, and then I'm, you know, after college, I was hit with the reality that suddenly, you know, traditional artists are having trouble getting work.
And right.
You know how to use a computer. And I said, what's that? A computer? What? You know? It was like, yeah, here, use it. I was like, where's the on button? You know?
Exactly.
It was devastating. I did not know how to turn on a computer in 1995, okay? And that's when I went to study how to do that. So.
Yeah. Hello?
Film and editing and everything like that, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of that, that was the whole thing. But I was doing like 100 different things, like just, you know, all these different things and even voiceovers and different stuff like that. And, you know, I was like, Jesus, this is all over the place. What the hell am I going to do?
Right.
And that's when in 1998, I said, you know what, let me form a studio, kind of that umbrellas all of these different things. And get some of my friends together and some of my former students that I would teach and things like that to, you know, kind of come together and let's make divisions
right in
it. So it's not just comics, it's beyond comics. That's kind of the idea.
Okay.
And that's what we invented the whole studio and the website, which, like you said before, is beyondcomics.tv. And that's kind of how the whole company came about. And, you know, after all these years that have gone by, believe it or not, it's been almost 2 decades since the last superhero was created, like a real big kind of superhero.
Right.
You know? And, you know, people have done like a lot of little attempts, but it's always somebody wearing a leather jacket and sunglasses, you know?
Right.
And that's cool and everything, but, you know, that's not like the next Spider-Man or the next Superman or the next Batman, you know?
Right.
I kind of always liked those classic wear a cape, wear a mask, you know, bring something up with it. And that's kind of when I started, you know, saying, let me take some of ideas that I had and try to, you know, create different new superheroes. And that was when I came up with the idea for doing Ravidactyl, which is that new superhero character we were talking about. And then that all got kind of interrupted after the whole 9/11 thing.
Right.
Like when I tried to figure out a way to raise money for some of the victims who were left out of the relief funds, you know, because maybe like their father who died in the Trade Center or something was not actually a U.S. citizen, so they were not eligible for the relief funds.
Right.
That's when I came up with the civilian justice character. And when that was like my first self-published book. And then when we did that, it really, you know, it's like, love it or hate it, it did the job. It got those people some money. And that was kind of the whole point, was to help, you know?
Right.
So they completely donated the whole first year's profits there. And
nice.
It was good. It was really emotional, though, just meeting the people and, you know, writing checks, like, individually to each person and stuff. It was a very emotional kind of experience. Everyone was, like, so nice and friendly, and you just really felt for them, you know?
Right, yeah.
So that was kind of the segue away from Ravidactyl into something else, and now back to Ravidactyl, you know?
Right. Then, so is there going to be a back to the civil injustice thing? Are you doing a follow-up for that? Or?
Yeah. I mean, now that, you know, kind of we released that tribute book, we're now following up with a new book, which is going to be the sequel called Codename Justice.
Okay.
And that's when the character, for those, you know, for those people who have not seen it yet, you can see more of it at civilianjustice.com or codenamejustice.com. And, you know, basically, it really picks up where the last book left off, but in a much larger aspect, because it starts to deal with a lot of the stuff that a lot of, you know, the distributors and different people would not allow us to show. I mean, if you remember, if anybody said anything negative about, you know, the U.S. in any capacity, they would, like, censor them. Like, remember Bill Maher got kicked off TV for making a joke?
Right.
That?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all that kind of stuff back then. So it was a very sensitive time. So it was kind of a, you know, very good guys versus bad guys. You couldn't really get into too much detail.
Right.
And in the new book, it really kind of shows the progression and growth of the character Justice. And Justice will become Codename Justice, where he completely changes his costume into a more global look so that he's a hero for the world rather than just for one country. He's a hero for the world, you know?
Right.
And the whole point is that anybody could be, you know, the hero under the mask of justice. Could be a man, could be a woman, could be anybody. And really making it clear that the character does not represent any one presidential candidate or any one government, but he represents the voice of the unheard people. And that's kind of what he goes out to do, and really fight for peace. That's kind of the whole idea of the character. And that's, he's like a very urban, you know, motorcycle biker, you know, black stealthy looking suit, you know, with like red lining and stuff, and little bled red lining. It's kind of a pretty mysterious kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
So that's that book there, which is very different than Ravidactyl, which is kind of like the sci-fi, you know, mythology of existence and life and what that means. And, you know, what do you do when you're this hero and you hear the voices of people crying out for help? You know, who do you save and who do you let die by not saving them instead? And the torturous feelings that deals with, and trying to understand the missing link to existence. And it's a pretty deep book, that one, you know?
Right.
That one I've been writing for a long time.
Now, what year did you release Civilian Justice?
I created Civilian Justice in 2001, right after.
Right.
You know, there was a, you know, at that time, there was such a feeling of hopelessness and loss. And, you know, when you looked at, like, characters like Spider-Man fighting fake villains.
Right.
You know, it didn't seem to click at that time. It was a real special, almost frozen moment in time back then. You know?
Right.
So that's why I said, you know what, instead of having a hero who fights these fictionalized Dr. Octopus characters or whatever, let's have a superhero who has the balls to actually go out there and fight terrorism and violence and gang violence and, you know, and really try to create peace and fight real villains so that people who read the book could feel a sense of relief through the comic.
Right.
You know? Relieve their, you know, frustration and things in the safe form of a comic, you know?
Right.
And kind of show, you know, like really break it down to show the difference between innocent, peace-loving Muslims who have nothing to do with any of this terrorism stuff at all, and then these evil, sick, twisted villains who have stolen an innocent, peaceful religion and hiding behind it and using it for their own benefit. It's insane what's happened, you know?
Right.
Just insane. And then all the craziness that's going on with, you know, oh my God, with the way the whole country's being run, and you know, and people's lives are being given up for the, you know, the worth of a dollar. It's crazy. I mean, it's just it's almost unreal if you think about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
The value of human life has been reduced to that of the dollar. It's sick.
Yes.
So that's the my political stance.
Now, from a indie publisher's business standpoint. It's been 5 years since the first issue. Now you have to play catch up with the fans that actually picked up that book. What's your strategy going to be like to get that crowd base back that picked up the first book? Are you looking for that same audience, or are you looking for a different audience because of the time lapse?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, I invented the character in 2001. We released the book right before 2003. So it actually hasn't been as long as it seems, though it feels really long. So it's been about 3.5 years.
Right.
And since that time, from the very first book to everything we've done in between and now, I think the biggest thing that I realize is that if, you know, it's one thing to release a tribute book. It's another thing if you want to release an ongoing series.
Right.
Just like, you know, Marvel Comics or DC Comics, they will finish 10 books before they release the first one.
Exactly.
That way they don't fall behind. And also just... You know, I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, but to take out an ad, a full-page color ad, I mean, people charge like $9,000 for that.
Yeah.
And it is insane. So if you're going to actually spend that kind of money,
right.
You know, which is enough to pay your rent, you know,
exactly.
For half a year or whatever, right? You know, you really got to have a plan and have books lined up and ready to go.
Right.
And, you know, thankfully we've had a really strong fan base. We've done, like, a lot of outsourcing work and different things like that and kept it going online in the meantime. And I think that even though, like, we have many of the books done now, I purposely wanted to hold back and release it when we have finished, you know, a certain number of books so that we can release them consistently one after the next, and ride high. So we'll be having, you know, we have things set up with Wizard Magazine and with Diamond Distributors, and a whole bunch of just, you know, different outlets to market it and get the word out. And I think that the fans who were our original fans, we've actually, you know, we've kept up with them. We've sent them updates. They've emailed to ask questions and what's going on, you know.
Right.
And we've kind of kept it going by releasing special editions of the comic and holographic editions and things for those special collectors who like those, you know.
Right.
And then for the regular, you know, for the regular books and things like that, you know, that's just out there for fans to collect and things, and it's always like a kick to see it like on eBay, and you know,
right.
They're selling it for like $1 zillion now if it's signed or whatever, and I'm like, Jesus, maybe I should sign these and put them on myself, for God's sake. I haven't done that, you know.
Yeah.
But it's cool, and you know, we give away like all the trading cards and stuff like that, and I see that on eBay all the time, and people are actually paying money for that, but I give that away for free.
Yeah.
So, I don't know why they're doing it. Just come to a convention, I'll give you a bunch of cards. but it was great, you know, and it was cool too, because like, you know, Wizard helped us distribute like over 300,000 of those, which was really, really great. That helped get the word out just publicity wise.
Right.
You know? And for an independent artist who's, you know, I mean, we're like a bunch of guys stuck in a big closet we call a studio, and we just sit here nonstop 17 hours a day going until we get the stuff done, you know?
Right.
So it's weird for us to have like issue 3 finished and we're looking at it, but we can't put it out yet because we have to get everything all set up and ready to go so that when we spend the money to actually take out the advertising and say, you know, kind of relaunch it, so to speak.
Right.
You know, that's why we're doing Codename Justice as number one rather than Civilian Justice number two. It's like
right.
Its own book, but it does continue the sequel. And then Ravidact will be released as a number one. You know, and in between all that stuff, we did the live-action films, and thank God that actually won the New York International Film Festival, which was like a real blessing. And that was really good. So there's been like all these different little things in between that we've done, you know, the audio comic book on CD and all these kind of little in-betweeners that we were kind of releasing at the same time as getting everything else prepared and ready for the launch. Because when we're going to launch it, we really want to do it hard and big.
Right.
And get it out there. And we're also simultaneously, you know, in the interim, we got signs for a video game deal and an animation deal, which took 4 years to actually confirm.
Right.
Very, very hard to go through that process and, you know, and rights. And the biggest thing that I was holding out for was to be able to keep my rights.
Right.
Which I was able to do, thank God. And that was very, very difficult. So so kind of in this huge process, that's how it all came to be. But it's I don't think people really realize how difficult it is for an independent, you know, artist creator to sit back, write every script, draw every page, digitally color it, letter it, lettering a comic book. People don't realize it takes 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You can't letter one comic book in less than 3 weeks. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and then also you have a 6 month pre-solicitation through distribution.
Right.
So even when it's finished, you still have to wait another 6 months for it to get out there.
Exactly.
And there's like so much involved in it, and then preparing for conventions and signings and all that stuff, because a lot of people just put out the books, and they have been such fantastic independent artists that I have seen who don't get recognition. They don't sell the books. They have to quit because people don't know the books exist.
Exactly.
And I hate that, because they're good artists. They're good people, and they deserve to be seen by, you know, others who can appreciate their work. But unfortunately, you know, on a business end of it, they don't know how to do marketing for themselves or for their own work.
Right.
And it's frustrating. So I figure if we're going to spend, you know, the next 4 to 5 years of our lives, you know, creating new heroes and all these things, spend the same amount of time trying to prepare to launch it and publicize it and get it out there. Because, you know, it deserves to be seen. It's very hard to, you know, compete and stay afloat with the big, you know, the big two like Marvel and DC, which is, you know, incredible and awesome. But I think our niche is the fact that we create all new superheroes. That's
right.
Our thing, you know?
Exactly.
And we do it with multimedia, you know, like we have like the action figure prototype set to go, and, you know, and the live action stuff and the cartoon that's coming out with Master Chill Productions and everything. That's like a big deal. So when we hit, we're going to try to hit hard. We just have to take a long time to do it, because it's just little guys in a big studio just praying every day as we work, you know?
Exactly. And I think one of the smart things that you did was actually get a spot and present your product at the licensing show.
Thanks.
That was one of the smartest moves that you did. And I believe that's what trickles some of your things going on now.
Thanks, yeah, it was very...
Why don't you elaborate on that? What was your thought process behind it? What made you think about going there and putting your product up there?
Well, I think at the licensing show, you want to try to show the industry that, hey, you know, we might be small and independent, but we're here.
Right.
You know, and try to take note if you can, you know? And it was no easy task to, you know, get the likes of, you know, like David Prowse, who was, you know, Darth Vader of Star Wars fame, you know, in our project, and Coolio and Donald Faison from NBC Scrubs. I mean, these are like big guys who don't have to do any of this stuff, you know?
Right.
They're like these multimillionaire celebrity guys, and they don't have to work another day if they don't want to.
Exactly,
you know? And it was great that they saw the stuff and they wanted to be a part of it, and they're the ones who are in the live action shorts that we filmed, which was great. And I think that really gave us another edge too, because it brought the vision of the comics to, you know, live action as best as we can do as independent artists, you know.
Right.
And it kind of just helps get it out there. So when we did the licensing show, we had like the live action video playing in the background and giant posters and all this kind of stuff. It's kind of like you're saying, hey, hello, we're over here. You know, the little booth on the right. So it's like,
yeah.
I know Marvel has like half the room, but we're this, you know. and it's just like, it's crazy. It's a very hard job, though. I mean, you know, even the big guys, like I said, like Marvel and DC, I mean, they have a real hard task to keep such classic characters interesting and new.
Right.
That's a real hard thing to do, but I think a lot of fans don't like when they keep altering the origins and they give Spider-Man like a gold metallic suit now. You know what I mean? I think they're not in for that. You know, they like the original characters, but it's hard to keep it new and interesting. So again, that's, I think, where our niche is, that we're creating all new characters and giving something new to the fans that, you know, have grown up with comics, so that, you know, it's something that they can embody, both, you know, adults and kids alike.
Right.
Something like that.
Now, what was one of the positive things you walked away from the experience at the trade show?
I think the fact that I didn't pass out after not having any sleep. It was terrible. The stress to finish everything and get that ready for the show.
Right.
Was astronomically insane. And you have to pay for carpet, You know? I don't think they know that at big shows like that, you have to pay for, like, a sheet on the wall and carpeting. And if you don't, then you have, like, a big concrete slab, and you're like, oh, you didn't pay for carpet, you know? So, you know, it drains you financially and it drains you emotionally and physically to get everything ready. But I think walking away from it, it really showed me that it's really smart to set up appointments in advance, you know?
Yeah.
And it's hard to do it there, but it's you have to really network and get out there and introduce people, you know, and say, hi, you know, here's what we've done, take a look. And you have to grab them in 3 seconds or you lost them.
Right.
You know? It's got to be something interesting. And, I mean, a lot of people don't know. I mean, I spent 14 years just writing and finalizing the screenplay for Ravidactyl. And for that superhero character, I mean, just going over it and over it and over it. And it's one of those situations where it's like you're almost like bouncing off the wall back and forth with all these different, you know, things in between it, you know, and kind of having your hat, you know, wearing so many hats at the same time, you know.
Right.
The different kind of things you're trying to do. So kind of have to clear your mind, go in and say, okay, what can I do to get these people to at least give me a chance and look at the stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it was the same thing, actually, when I did the work with Tommy Kahn on Spawn. I mean, there was a line of about 5,000 people to get his autograph at the time. And Spawn was like the number one comic book back then. And I was thinking to myself, geez, you know, how can I get this guy's attention so that he'll give me a chance to, you know, draw for his book, you know?
Right.
And I used that same mold that I did that latex bodysuit with. I sculpted like the first latex molded full body 6 foot Spawn suit.
Wow.
And got on the train and another train story, right? And literally just walked in there and the line parted like the Red Sea. And I just walked down. And this is before the Spawn movie, also keep in mind. So there was no latex molded Spawn suit or anything. You know, this is like when Spawn first hit.
Wow.
And I remember just walking down there, and Todd, you know, he looks up, and he's like, oh, Christ, it's some crazy food. You know? It was this great reaction. And I remember my dad was, like, filming this in the background, bless him, you know. And it was like a teenager, like, skipped out on, you know, in school just to get down there as fast as I could.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm wearing this big helmet, this big Spawn latex mask, and I can't hear anything, and I can barely see through, like, the green glowing eyes I built in there. And I walk over to him, and, you know, I was like, hi, and I hand him, like, a little packet of all my artwork and shake his hand, you know, and I walk away and stuff. And when I went back and watched the video, I saw it was hilarious. I saw that he was like, you know, oh, wow, okay, you're not a crazy fan. You actually, you know, made the suit and you're trying to submit work. Okay, that makes sense now, you know. And I see that he was trying to talk to me and give me some kind of a special limited edition drawing that he did. And I didn't hear him through the mask, so I just walk away. And I see him in the video standing there looking like, this dick just walked away from me. And I was like, oh, no, I couldn't believe it. Absolutely didn't see him, and I couldn't hear through that freaking mask.
Wow.
Video, it looks like I just dissed Necron, which is not the case, you know. And then luckily, a few months later, I just really by chance, I you know, he was launching the whole Spawn toy line for the first time back then. And I saw him at Toy Fair, and I had pictures of the event, and I reminded him I was the crazy guy in the suit. You know? And he was like, oh, okay. He's like, okay, listen. He says, you know, submit a poster. Here's the information. And I was, like, so excited, and, you know, I did this huge drawing that I was telling you about before and submitted it, and that was the first tired piece that we got. So that was the big break in there, so to speak, you know, just to backtrack.
Wow. So now let's go into Ravidactyl.
Sure.
Let's go into... number one, you have a lot of things going on with that project.
Yeah.
You have the live action film, which, you know, you got to tell me how you did the special effects with the armor on the body. That's pretty hot. You have the animation, which is crazy. You have the figure, the action figures. You have the comic book.
Yeah.
Let's take a step by step, you know, and then also, so that the fans will hear. What is your expectation as far as release date? When do you envision you releasing the comic book?
I plan to release everything sometime by the year 3042. I figure by
oh,
the
sh-
time, And, you know, and then there's no pressure, right? You know? If I release it before that, it's like a surprise. You know? I really feel like that. I keep upping the coming soon date, you know? Coming.
Yeah, I know. Oh, no. I know. I'm one of those guys like, yo, what is this guy going to release this date?
Over and they're like, when is the next book coming out? I'm like, really soon. It's going to get there eventually, you know. And, you know, really what it comes down to is, I mean, it's funny, too. I read, like, you know, these things on the internet sometimes, and these guys are like, oh, you know, he must be like a multi-billionaire. He released, like, a color glossy book. No, it took 10,000 years to save up to pay for it. That's all, you know. That's why I haven't released the book yet. You have to save all your money for this stuff, you know. If we were multi-millionaires, we would just go ahead and hire 52 artists and have them go ahead and knock it out, you know.
Exactly.
But, yeah, that don't, okay, I'll take it, just as you said, step by step, right?
Step by,
all right, kind of, you know, I guess the thing was this. I was writing this, I guess where's the best place to begin? I suppose that I think, you know, each of us at our own point in time kind of deal with our thoughts of life and existence and, you know, if the soul exists and there is a heaven and all this kind of stuff, right? Scientifically speaking, how does that work? You know, if the brain is connected to the body and the brain carries on memories and things like that, if the body dies and the brain dies and you do have this soul that goes forward and continues on, how do you keep your memories, right?
Right.
How do you do that? Because the brain is dying in the body and that's what you need to recall stuff, right?
Right.
You ever wake up in the middle of the night, you can't remember somebody's name?
Right.
Or you can't remember something. You need your mind to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I was thinking, well, let's try to prove the existence of the afterlife, scientifically speaking, okay? And let's try to have it make sense. And I was just kind of writing this, like, almost like a thesis, you know?
Right.
Just for myself, like a thesis paper, just in life and existence and all these kind of things I said already. And at the same time, I created, you know, this Raven Dagle character, which I had mentioned, you know, before. It started out kind of as a different design altogether, and then kind of built it from this Robin design all the way through until it became its own thing. And, you know, from then, kind of went forward and, you know, started talking about mythology and, you know, history and mythology and the character with that. And I started thinking, you know, I wonder if I could combine these two separate things, you know?
Right.
Kind of my neurotic worries about, you know, the afterlife, right? And the, you know, and just kind of the fun of the superhero, right?
Right.
And that's kind of how I put the stories together into its own thing. And we really, I mean, literally over years and years of going over this stuff, really have come up with a lot of mind-blowing stuff that I think people, you know, when I run it by different people, they've kind of gotten like this shocked look on their face because it's like, oh my God, that makes sense, you know?
Right.
And there's, and it is disturbing. I had to be really careful with it because it started freaking people out about this topic, you know?
Yeah.
And that was not my intent. I didn't want to start depressing people about existence or whatever. You know what I mean? It is the comic book, you know, industry world, right? You don't want to get too.
Yeah, right.
And depress people and have like a little 5-year-old saying, oh my God, how are we going to exist after our bodies die? You know, you want to die, right? So, but, you know, what ended up happening was is that I said, okay, let me go ahead and kind of, you know, combine this as an exciting kind of almost X-Files-ish type of storyline. You know, it's almost like the X-Files meets the Matrix meets Batman, you know?
Right.
And kind of putting that whole storyline together. So I was just writing and organizing it and making it more exciting and got to a point where, you know, I think kids will enjoy the superhero fun factor of it. And I think that adults will enjoy the depth of the storyline, you know?
Right.
And one of the things is that when we started getting into the effects and things like that, you know, it was fun because I remember the first time I got into special effects was in the mid to late 90s, before they released the special edition versions of Star Wars.
Right.
The new added effects and things like that. This all, like, ties together, believe it or not, but... What ended up happening was that some friends of mine and I shot like really one of the first Star Wars spoof trailers, you know?
Yeah.
Back then, it was before everyone was doing a Star Wars spoof, and we put it all together, and we're pretending that we're fighting with lightsabers, but we're not, like, holding anything except, like, flashlight handles and all this crap, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I remember just as a lark, I said, you know, let me try to learn special effects. And I sat down, and I, you know, sat there, like, just, you know, for fun, on, you know, in between classes and just, you know, in my spare time trying to teach myself these programs. And, you know, digitally lit the lightsabers and the shells and the walls and the laser beams, and I invited my friends over. And I showed them this, and they had no idea that the special effects were going to be done in it at all, you know?
Right.
And it all made sense, and it looked, like, really crazy and fun and cool. It's actually on the website at the beyondcomics.tv. If you search around, you'll find it in there.
Yes, it's there.
But that was kind of the stepping stone for saying, hey, you know what, we could actually do special effects now. We could actually do this, you know? It's just a matter of taking it past that kind of cheesy, independent looking kind of film student level and getting it to like a real professional quality level, you know?
Right.
So before releasing the live action version of Ravidactyl, you know, the short, the one that won the film festival and getting the celebrities in there and all that stuff, you know, that was like the third version that we did.
Wow.
You know, the first two I scrapped this purposely because I didn't want to show anything that didn't have like the highest quality looking effects that we were capable of, you know,
right,
as an independent studio. So, you know, obviously we can't possibly produce the kind of stuff that Warner Brothers with a, you know, $200 million budget can produce,
right,
you know, but pretty good for what we got away with. And I think the most frustrating aspect of it was the fact that, you know, you only have a certain amount of time you can put to it. So we have this trailer with some fun, cool special effects scenes and things, but you don't really get a chance to see too much of the story, which was really frustrating. And that's when, you know, a few years later, we just recently did the, you know, we premiered, like you were talking about, the trailer for the live-action anime movie that's coming out for Ravidactyl.
Right.
And, you know, that's in association with our managers out in Los Angeles and different things like that, which is, you know, finally taken over. And we got signed with them after we won the film festival, so kind of everything started spiraling, you know, from there on in, you know.
Right.
And just to, you know, I guess it's like a long-winded story, but it kind of takes time to explain it all because there's so much behind it. But
right.
At least with that anime trailer for Ravidactyl, you can really see a little touch of the story in there, you
right.
know? And that was the first time we really got a chance to really show it the way it was kind of meant to be seen. And you know, I'm very excited. We just finished the first it's crazy, but we completed the entire 90-minute animatic 3D storyboard for the upcoming animated movie.
Wow.
And I just last week, and it was like incredible after, you know, working on it now for a year and a half to actually see that thing from beginning to end with a lot of finished scenes in there. And we've re-rendered all the characters, and there's like super, super detailed now, and the liquid blood armor is flowing through his body. It's like sick. It's insane to see the new stuff. I haven't put it on the website yet, but you can see that trailer that you were talking about up there. A little teaser to kind of whet everybody's appetite for it, and hopefully they'll want to see more, you know?
Right.
But it's just enormous. It embodies, like, the script and just, you know, the whole thing. And I've been just working with Master Joe Productions on that nonstop and, you know, just going over every little scene and every detail and editing it and going back and forth with them on it. And, you know, the time difference is crazy. I'm just going nonstop and, you know, at least 17 hours a day minimum. And it's weird because nobody knows any of this stuff. That's why it's so awesome that, you know, yay for Crazy Comics and the web broadcast, man. It's awesome. You know?
Thanks.
It really gives people a chance just to hear, hey, you know, we're actually doing stuff, you know.
Right, right.
There's stuff being done over here. and it's great. It's just, it's a great outlet to be able to, you know, just log on and at your leisure listen to different interviews and the craziness that each person's going through in their own way, you know.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why we do the show is because, I mean, the big two, they have all the resources in the world, but all us little guys, you know, we don't have that many outlets, and that was the basically the driving force behind Catch the Craze, and we've met so many great talented people in the industry, and it's like, you know what, let's get them out there, let's get them to promote their products, and then when they launch a new product, let's get them back on the show, you know, and build a fan base, you know.
Definitely.
So when do you plan? When's the actual? What's going to come first? The film or the comic book and the stores, or you can launch them all at the same time?
That's a great question. I think what I'm trying to do is this. I mean, like, one of the big things that we're working like a, like I was saying before, like there's a major crossover that we're trying to do, which is going to be, we hope all goes well, with a very, very famous, well-known superhero.
Right.
And we're finishing some licensing deals with them, and they have to approve everything that we do. It has to be approved by them.
Right.
For this, you know, crossover. But if all goes well, I think that's really going to propel the character, I hope, into the stratosphere of superheroes, because, you know, it kind of legitimizes the character if you see him, you know, together, side by side, you know.
Right.
And it's, you know, there's nothing more exciting than seeing a new superhero with a classic superhero and seeing them together, you know.
Nice.
And it really legitimizes it. I mean, like, even, like, with, you know, like, with the first one that we did, which I can talk about because that's past, obviously, but, like, when Marvel approved us having Captain America at the end of Civilian Justice shaking hands in that live photo.
Right.
You know, that was a huge deal because it's like the first USA hero was passing the mantle to the new one, you know.
Right.
So you see my Civilian Justice character shaking hands with Captain America. I mean, that was a whole licensing thing. I mean, you'll read it on a comic. It says, you know, approved by Marvel Comics. And, you know, I mean, everything had to be carefully, you know, approved by everybody. So for this, you'd actually see, like, characters fighting in the comic book. It wouldn't be with that as a different superhero, but it's it'd be really exciting. So I think the plan, so to speak, that we're hoping to do, first launch the sequel to Civilian Justice, which is codenamed Justice.
Right.
And, you know, get that out there to kind of relaunch him as the hero for today and show the major progression of the character and how he's changed so much over these years, because he started out one way, thinking one thing, and then just like the times, you know, so much has changed, and so has he. And I think it represents that, and I really wanted to have the character represent the voice of the people and what's going on, you know, in today's world. So I think that'll be first, and you'll see an additional preview of Ravenactyl in that. And actually, if people buy the first book of Civilian Justice, there is a one-page preview in there of Ravenactyl, where we have the Thunder character, which is this evil bad guy, looking at the Ravenactyl armor of the hand, saying that he must complete it and find it. And that's like a little kind of preview of something to come, you know, kind of
right.
Like Wolverine appeared in that Hulk issue way back in the day, you know?
Right.
So kind of go along those lines. And like I said, even though some of the books are done already, I really want to hold off on releasing them until everything is set.
Right.
And then release them one after the next. Really do it right, because you don't want to kind of do it half-assed. So I'll just release it as like a mini-series. So like the first issues will be like maybe a 3 or 4 part issue series, almost like a movie, you know?
Right.
So the first one will be Ravenactyl Project Evolution. That's the first series that will come out. And then after that, the next series will be Ravenactyl Poltergeist, which is the sequel, you know?
Right.
And we have the Codename Justice books coming. So it's hard to kind of balance these two different characters. So hopefully by next year this time, we hope that we'll be closer to that official release date and have more information, because by the time we finish the cartoon and things like that, and we get like the distribution deals with all those companies for animation, they may purposely sign us to hold off on releasing the books until the cartoon comes out so they could cross-promote it with that, you know?
Right.
Same with the toys. Like, we just got an offer for having the toys produced, which was awesome, and I don't want to say no to that. I want to definitely go with it, but I want to make sure that they're cool with waiting to release it until everything comes out so it could each, like, kind of cross-promote off each other.
Right.
You know? Because I think if someone's going to do that kind of work, and for any independent publishers out there, if you're going to go out and you're going to release a book, you know, it takes so much work, and it's so difficult to get everything.
Right.
We're really, really blessed to have the support of Diamond and, you know, and Wizard and things like that. It's a tremendous, tremendous amount of work to do it and to stay on top of everything. And, you know, it's a very tight-knit industry. So I think that it's been great that people have been really supportive, thank gosh, which is really good. And, you know, I think that just all in all, you really want to try to release your product when you have enough time devoted to promoting it so people know it exists. That's the whole point.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Because, like I said before, I mean, there are some terrific artists. I mean, they're so much better than me. I mean, they're so good, and they just don't get seen because they don't know how to promote themselves. Actually, I've recently just hired a couple of those people to come do some work for us so that, you know, we could promote them, just to give them some push and help, because they're good and they deserve to be seen, you know?
Right, right.
So, hopefully it'll go in that order and, you know, continue on. And especially with the cartoon and everything, that's a thrill to see that thing come to life, you know.
Now, will you be putting any more teasers on your website?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, well, every, you know, few months or so, we'll kind of drop a little new thing here and there and hide it throughout the website so people have something to look forward to, you know, and check out who come and check out the website, you know.
Right.
And, you know, again, the website's, as you said before, www.beyondcomics.tv.
Are you doing any events this year?
Yeah, we'll be doing some more conventions, you know. The New York, you know, the big New York convention coming up next year, and the Big Apple Con and things like that. And some do some Wizard World too. So a bunch of different like conventions and things like that. A little bit, kind of previewing stuff now. But once the stuff is about to be released and it really comes out, that's when we're going to go like ballistic with the tour and really get everything out there.
Right.
And you know, do the San Diego Comic Con and stuff, and that's going to be insane.
Yeah, nice.
So hopefully it'll be good, yeah. It's the best feeling to actually go out and meet the fans and meet the readers and people who, you know, actually know of your stuff. I mean, it is the most fulfilling feeling, because when you're sitting alone in the studio for 17 hours with the group of guys that you're with, like, every day just working nonstop, you know, it's right. Very isolating. You have, you know, you're just there almost like a robotic machine, constructing these ideas that take forever. Nobody has ever come up to me and said, I love that stairwell in the background in the right corner. That and I spent 4 hours drawing that freaking stairwell, you know?
Right.
That trash can, that didn't appear out of nowhere. I used reference and everything. You know, but it like, it killed me. They turned the page so quickly, you know? It's like, oh, I read the dialogue, next page. No, look at the trash can in the corner.
But you know what? If you didn't put that trash can in there, they'd notice it.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
There's no background.
Yeah, so it doesn't. You don't win in any situation.
Right. Well, that's true.
So now, if there was one thing that you would want to share with an aspiring artist, writer, or, you know, an individual looking to start his own company and promote his own product, what would you say?
I would say, make sure not to quit your job at McDonald's in the meantime. You're in for one hell of a journey.
Have you had your break today?
Right. Exactly. It's really tough. I mean, you know, there's a couple of, you know, I've been like teaching since I was like a teenager myself, since back in 1990, and you know, it's wild to see like what's happening with a lot of the different people and what they're doing. And, you know, all their successes and things like that. And
right.
one of them is, like, this young guy. He's really cool. He does a lot of great work. And, you know, I think he could very easily be hired by some of the main studios. And I try to tell him, go for it and things like that. But he's really hell-bent on publishing himself. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to do my own book. I'll put it out, and then I'll retire next year. And I'm like, okay, wait. Like, that sounds really good,
right.
You know. But you got to plan for the following. And then I kind of go through a whole list to try to prepare him for it. So I guess advice seriously would be, make a decision of what your goal is. Do you want to work for other people and draw other people's characters, and will you be happy with that? I mean, one of the hardest things I actually did was turn down doing mainstream work so that I could finish my own characters and finish what I was trying to do. Because, you know, for me, I would love to draw the people's characters and things like that after I've gotten this stuff out.
Right.
You know? Because I've got to get this stuff out, and it takes so long for us to do it. There's no way to do it quickly, you know?
Right.
The only way you can do it quickly is if you're like a multi-billionaire and you could just release it at the drop of a hat and you have like 50 guys working for you, you know?
Right.
So for a bunch of guys like us working in the studio and doing freelance work and doing, you know, third-party work just to bring in some more money for the company and getting investors and things like that and everything, you know, I mean, thankfully everybody's gotten a return on everything like that they've done, but, you know, you spend more time doing the business end of just making the distribution deals and the calls and the emails and the follow-ups and the meetings than you do just to sit down and draw, you know?
Yeah.
And it's terrible. Like, the internet has become like a means of work for me via email and things like that. So I miss the days where I used to sit sit down and hang out on the internet and chat with friends and IM and things like that. You know, now it's, oh my God, you know, which person is going to IM me from their deadline and everything. All these things. So I would really say to any aspiring artist, you know, who likes comics and wants to do that, try to focus on what you really want to do. And if you're happy with drawing other people's characters, go out, submit to the, you know, the major companies, the independent companies. You know, hear what they say. If it sounds like BS, ignore it. If it makes sense to you, you know, absorb it, learn from it, and go forward. But if you want to self-publish and you want to get your own original ideas out there and you really want to make it happen, start saving up way in advance, put stuff aside, and really block out outlines, 2-3-page outlines of your story ideas, a couple of sample pages, get it done in color. Make sure that it looks as good as what's being printed out there. If it doesn't, get some people who are really good artists to help you out and really good writers to help you out. And be really, really patient. Really patient. And expect somewhere within a 10-year period, if you're lucky, to get your stuff out there, you know?
Right.
And go forward in that respect, you know? And patience and also constantly learning and improving is a major factor. I mean, with the first book that I released with Civilian Justice, I mean, there are so many things that I could do better and could improve upon. And, you know, there's so many things that could always be done. You know, you always hear artists saying stuff like that.
Right.
I remember I was having a talk with Jimmy Palmiotti the other day. We kind of IM each other once in a while at 3 o'clock in the morning to see, you know, what deadline we're each working on, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he was comparing notes with me about, you know, how one takes criticism from the critics, you know, if they're not supportive of the work and how you deal with that. And it was just interesting to hear that, you know, somebody at his level, you know, has the same kind of thoughts and feelings and, you know, that you know, somebody who's trying out as an independent artist, you know, has as well, you know?
Right.
So I just think it's all about trying to really, you know, hear criticism. Don't be discouraged by it, but learn from it, you know?
Right.
And also know who's criticizing you. I think the biggest piece of advice is don't show your work to artists, you know, to different artists. If you're trying to get work, show it to editors. Find out who the editor of a book is.
Right.
And that's who you want to show the work to. But if you want to learn how to improve your artwork, if you're an artist, then don't show it to an editor, show it to an artist, you know?
Right.
But keep in mind that, you know, a lot of them might be very aggressive or picky and stuff, you know?
Right.
And it always drives me crazy, like, when I hear an artist say, oh, I don't read comic books and I don't collect, you know, figures and action figures and things like that. That's totally BS. They love comic books and they love toys. They just don't want to admit it because they're trying to be cool.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, that's ridiculous. They like that stuff. They just are, you know, kind of very into their own kind of world, so to speak, you know? So
right.
You always want to kind of know who you're talking with and don't be discouraged by it, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Very important. And by all means, try to learn Photoshop because that will save your butt.
Yes. Yes, it will.
Definitely. Definitely.
So do you have any final statements you want to share?
Yeah. I think that, you know, to all the comic book artists and writers out there and all the fans, I think it's so important that, you know, that we've all kind of made an attempt to band together to keep the industry alive and keep it thriving and going, you know?
Yes.
And by all means, you know, a great deal of thanks and respect that I feel towards those people who have been supportive, you know, or even the critics who, you know, have been supportive but may have made, like, harsh comments or whatever because, you know, the ones who make sense, who are professional, will say, hey, you know what, here's how you can improve this. The ones who really give advice are the ones you should listen to.
Right.
So I think as a final note, it is truly a masterful thing to be able to go through this, you know, almost slavery-like job of being chained to a desk, not sleeping, and, you know, working nonstop. But it is a blessing because at the end of the day, you know, you get this final piece of work that, you know, embodies everything you've been working on, and you can show it, and you can have it, and you can say, hey, look, that's what I was busting my butt doing that trash can in the right-left corner, you know?
Exactly.
And it's a nice feeling, you know, to have that. And there is that dream that, hey, you know, you never know, maybe the character will take off and be the next big thing, you know? Maybe it'll vanish or whatever, who knows? But at least you try, you know? At least you know for yourself you made an attempt and an effort to try to do something new and to try to get it out there. And, you know, I think to any critics or fans who are not open to that idea or they don't want to kind of let anybody into the world, you know, don't do it, because I know, like, when there's a new fan who comes up to my table when I'm at a comic convention and their eyes widen in excitement and they see the new hero and they say, wow, do you think, you know, Ravidactyl, you know, versus Justice, you know, your characters, who would win in a fight? And they start asking cool things and what are their powers. That's when you know, like, wow, you got something there, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I do what I do, you know? That's what it's for, just to get that, you know, excitement that those kids see in their eyes, you know, something new, some new hero that they could grow up with. And hopefully when we're old and gray, you know, our grandkids will be talking about our superhero characters.
Exactly.
And that's the world of comics.
Oh, yes, exactly. You either love it or you don't.
Exactly. Like, either way, you know, love it or hate it, you know, at least we're doing something, right?
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Greg, thank you for being a guest on Catch the Craze.
Well, thank you for the invite. I really had a fun time.
Yeah, it was really good. It's actually extremely informative, and I'm sure that the guys out there listening would be able to walk away with a lot of good information from
Definitely.
This.
Just, you know, for anybody who's listening, don't give up. You know, if you have that dream and you have that passion to go for it, really just stick with it until it gets done. Don't stop until it's done. Once it's done, you'll be surprised. People will take note. People will take interest, and you know they'll if you build it, they will come.
Exactly. There you go. Let my people go. Yes. All right. Then when we come back, we'll have our final notes. Thank you again, Greg, for being on our show. And remember, you can visit BeyondComics.tv.
That's right. BeyondComics.tv. Yes, BeyondComics.tv.
Right. For more information. So we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Crazy Comics out.
Are you a retailer? Are you a rapper? Are you a publisher? What are you waiting for? Contact us at guests@catchthecraze.com and we'll send you your PDF document containing information on how you can sponsor a show by promoting yours. Peace, baby.
Wow, what can I say about that show? Entertaining, informative, inspiring. This is what I mean, and this is why we do this show. Greg White is a prime example of why we do the show. He's answered every single question. He's provided feedback. He's provided, he gave you a timeline, some history behind it. The real life process of trying to break in to the business of comics and multimedia through the eyes of an independent creator and what it really is like behind the scenes. And you know, I commend them for being so truthful. I mean, one of the great things I see as we do the show is that sometimes creators are not certain whether or not they should share certain things. And this is what the show is, because there are artists out there. There are writers out there. There are teams out there that are forming that want to become the next Image, that want to become the next Alias. And they need information. They seek information. And some of them don't have that outlet where, you know, where they can get real life information from others. And, you know, you can read how to publish comics through a book. You can read, you know, you can study, you know, the business of comics or whatever, but it doesn't prepare you for the real world. It doesn't prepare you for the next man. It doesn't prepare you for the deception, the lies, the false promises. Because it's life. We're all human beings. And if it's not on contract and people make promises, don't ever take a handshake as somebody's word. It has to be on paper. So anyway, and if you listen to what Greg said, you know, although he was extremely excited to have gotten a toy deal, a toy licensing deal, to have his product, you know, mass produce, he made certain that there was a clause in the contract indicating that the toy line cannot be released until the book is released, and the book cannot be released until the animation is released. I mean, so it's all ties into one mass media explosion, and that's a smart way of doing it. And he answered my question about why it took so long to come up with his follow-up issue. You know, was he concerned about it? And you heard him for himself. He answered the question, and he has a master plan. He has a game plan. He has a long-term plan. He has a strategy, you know. He has a business plan. He has his manager. He has you know, his attorneys, the guy is prepared, and he's doing things the right way, and he isn't he's not in a rush. And that's the important thing. Take your time, do it right, get it done the right way. We learned the hard way. We were overzealous, you know, when we started out, and we kept on putting out stuff and finding out that we made mistakes along the way, and it hurt us. And so now we're playing catch up, and we learn from our mistakes. And we learned from a lot of guys out in the business that we were able to talk to. And I'm certain we're going to make more mistakes down the road. We're humans. What do you expect? But, you know, this is one of the best shows we've had so far. Thank you, Greg, for being so honest. And you will see more of Greg as his projects, you know, progress. And this is another episode of Catch the Craze Podcast Audio Mix. It is 3 in the morning. I am going to sleep, guys. You know, I've been interviewing Greg for an hour. And I don't know how long it was. This morning, today, I haven't slept yet. And now I'm going to go to bed. So thank you for listening. Tune in next week. And tell a friend. Talk to you later, baby. Catch the craze. Peace. I'm so crazy. You so crazy. Crazy. Who's the